honorary clerk.
You are on the record.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Ada's October 26, 2017 board meeting. Brandon, would you do a roll call of the board members, please?
Mr. Wilkins.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Paraday.
Here.
Mr. Kennedy.
Present for now.
Deputy Mr. Burnett.
Here.
Ms. Brown.
Here.
Mr. Dick.
Here.
Mr. Prude.
Here.
Young Forum.
Thank you. Will you continue with staff and public, please?
All right. As I point to you, please state your name and organization. We'll start at your table.
John Springsteen, Ada.
Back down the corner.
Dave Newbury, East West Consulting.
Raymond PRC, Anthony. Alan Hillman, Consulting.
Alan Brady, Consulting.
Herbert Brady, East West Consulting. Consulting.
Trust Fund, Stephen.
John Fong, Stephen Turbine Technology.
Jean Terry, Ada.
Dan Britton, Fender.
Mark Gardner, BFM.
Roger Kelly, East West.
Michael Walton, Stephen Turbine.
Kelly Orell, Siemens Government Technologies.
Tom Harris, Kinnikazi.
Carson Rogers, Ada.
Scott Rowe.
Jeff Van Wong, Ada.
Elizabeth Greer, Ada.
Ellen Brander, Alaska Journal of Commerce.
Tim Gallagher, ACR.
Chip Brander, Western Business.
Jim Missouri, Interior.
Chris Anderson. Linda Sands, Ada.
Jerry G. Day, Department of Law.
Jim Ham, Staff, Ada.
Greg Appleby, Ada.
That has been.
Greg Kevin, Ada. Do we have public on the phone?
Yes.
Yes. Wait. Let's do the ones from ITU first. Can I get names from ITU people?
Patrice Lee, ITU.
Okay, I got Patrice Lee.
Pamela Troop.
Any other ITU? Okay, other public on the phone.
Dan Bross at KUAC Radio Fairbix.
Other public. Okay, sounds like that's it.
Thank you, Bryn. Of course, we have an agenda. Look for a motion for approval.
Yeah, motion to approve the agenda is presented.
Second. Any objections? Seeing none, the agenda is approved. That brings us to item number 5, public comments. For those of you wishing to comment today, please limit your testimony to 3 minutes or less. We need to set a record and have your name and affiliation clearly. And we will start with people online. Is there anybody online wishing to make a public comment this morning, this afternoon? Anybody online? All right, nobody online. We'll start in the room here. Let's start with, I got a list here, folks. Gentleman, my name is Tom Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'm just here. Sit right in front for us, Tom.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, board members of Ada. My name is Tom Harris, CEO of Kennecott. It's Village Corporation in the Mad Valley. We are here today to, with President Raymond Theodore and Vice President Al Tillman that we've met. And we're also grateful to have the support of Richard Porter, Kinnick Tribal Council, but he was not able to stay for today's event. Please know that Kennecott New, together with the Siemens Government Service Technology, has been coordinating an alternative LNG production chain that is not an expansion of any existing LNG facility. It is rather a new development in a new location on 3,000 acres of industrial zone land in Houston, located on Miller's Ridge Road that is bisected by the Alaska Railroad Corridor. It is a site specifically designed to provide increased diversity, security, and safety, as well as increased reliability of natural gas supply to the expanding Fairbanks community and other markets. In addition, this new proposed solution is scalable and capable of matching the demand growth that Fairbanks will experience as the use of natural gas becomes more cost-effective. we're here to share with you information that we hope will be of service to you as you evaluate this not as a competing interest, but a completing interest in your efforts to bring world-class energy to interior Alaska, and in particular the interior energy project. Of note, and as such, none of our team is responding to any open ADA RFP that may be currently in the solicitation phase. The following public comments will address specific aspects of this alternative approach that we believe as a professional courtesy we had an obligation to fully disclose to you, as we subsequently disclose to other Alaskans who may be impacted by these decisions. With that, with your permission, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to introduce Kelly Laurel, Director of Energy and Infrastructure for Siemens Government Technologies.
Well, I have Kelly second up, so with that, before you leave, Tom, are there any questions for Tom? Okay. Kelly?
Thank you. Good afternoon, sir. Thank you. As stated, I'm Kelly Laurel with Siemens Government Technologies. We represent the full breadth and depth of all the Siemens solutions, and we assist our customers in identifying and developing comprehensive solutions to some of their most complex problems. The IET challenge is one that we think that could benefit from our extensive global experience and expertise, not only in oil and gas, but also in industry sector. Bottom line, our multidisciplinary team looked at the Titan expansion plan, and we recognized that it had serious critical deficiencies that could put people's lives in jeopardy. The current plan is not utility-grade due to single points of failure. If an adverse event were to happen in the Titan plant, the backup plant centers around trucking LNG from Canada. But if you look closely at all the logistics, there aren't enough trucks nor hours in the day that it would be necessary to provide the quantity needed once the storage is depleted, before assets freeze and start to endanger people's lives. This could cause serious undue hardship. A single storage site is another single point of failure and probably not the wisest solution. These concerns will also be addressed further by the other speakers in a few moments. I just wanted to highlight that our team, along with other key stakeholders, brainstormed many different technologies and options, and we ultimately concluded that the most critical factor in achieving the HB105 compliant plan that efficiently and effectively and safely delivered a utility-grade supply of LNG was to leverage the railroad's existing infrastructure, thus creating the virtual pipeline to Fairbanks. In doing so, building any new LNG capacity at the Houston site had clear advantages over the current plan at the Titan location and contributes to the necessary diversification in the supply chain. This Houston LNG plant is not a pie in the sky, but rather is the well-thought-out holistic solution that can be implemented quickly for approximately about a year and designed in such a way that it can be scaled and evolved to best match the demand of IET as it grows over time. Furthermore, our financial model has indicated that our concept can economically deliver LNG at or below $16 an MCF and continues to reduce in price as the volume and demand grows. And speaking of growth, to help achieve economies of scale and accelerate reducing the price of natural gas, we have focused and done work at several viable strategies to grow that demand, in particularly by DOD. And in order to attract DOD to this plan, a utility-grade level of supply would be required. Again, unlike the current plan of trucking LNG, the railroad, which already exists at Houston, is a valuable existing asset that can sufficiently meet the capacity to transport all the needs for IET with no hidden costs or additional safety. And additionally, opening up these little railroads opens up further markets to better help the rest of Alaskans to achieve lower cost of energy. In closing, I just hope that you would remain open to allowing the leaders and key stakeholders in the interior to work independently with IGU to design a plan that was an acceptable level of risk for their community. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Kelly?
Gary? You mentioned a couple times health and safety. I couldn't follow you, your reasoning. Would you run through that again, please?
So, talking about the single point of failure is what we're concerned about in addition to the trucking and increasing. I can kind of go either side. I'm not sure which way you're referring.
Single point of failure being what?
Single point of failure kind of the all your eggs in one basket concept. If you have your production at Titan and expand all your capacity at Titan, then should an adverse event happen at Titan, whether, you know, a nefarious act, right, then you've knocked out your production. If you keep current Titan running and new capacity being in a separate location, you provide that sort of assurance and security by diversifying your supply.
Did your financial model look though at the redundant costs associated with operating at two locations opposed to one?
We did. So our model isn't building immediately to 100,000 gallons right off the bat. We're talking closer to having more like 60 or 90. We talked about doing three systems. The systems we're talking about, and they'll get into it further, are these modular, scalable systems, each producing 30,000 gallons of LNG a day. So we could put two into operation and get to 60,000, but even have a third should something go down, which also lends us to efficiency by turning one off and on. Sorry, yeah, another question.
Sure. So this is kind of coming out of nowhere. So let me ask, and suggest to our chair and to the board that we let everybody talk about what they want to talk about and then make notes on our questions, because I suspect that question is going to be answered later, and my question will be answered later. So, Mr. Chairman, if we could maybe take that approach to let folks lay out whatever this is and whatever information they have to pass out, and then we could circle back around with our individual questions, if that'd be all right?
Yeah, that'd be fine. I'm surprised, but I will say I'm surprised that there isn't anything written on the proposal of what you guys are planning to do.
We intend to leave you a white paper that's part of departure. We didn't know how best the forum would be structured, so we would speak, and we will leave some information behind.
I do have a question. You talked to failure, so to me the railroad is a single point of failure.
So you can still truck. So from the Houston plant, you can do rail or truck. From Titan, you can only truck.
Not necessarily. That's a debate issue. You just have to move it to a rail. Spur. One is pretty close. It's not finished. Would you have to run the rail spur? Okay. Any further questions? Thank you. Next up is Michael.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Michael Walhoff. I'm with the Dresser Rand Group within Things Energy. Appreciate the opportunity to address you this morning. For the past year, we've been working with local partners to evaluate alternative LNG projects to propose Titan expansion. Dresser Rand, which is part of the Siemens business, first started looking at how our modularized LNG production product might be a fit for this opportunity and this solution. At that time, an independent project developer was introduced into this project to take a look at it and see how this would play out on the economics and others. After many meetings, it became obvious that this developer was not looking out for the best interests of the Alaskans and for best interests of the community. At that time, we brought in Siemens Government Technology, which Kelly just introduced, to act as the developer for this project. At that time, SGT came in with a different view of the project and focused on the benefits to Alaska and the community this would be serving. I'd like to highlight how Siemens has worked closely with local partners and developed a concept that is aligned with the priorities of Alaska and how business is executed here. The team that Siemens is dedicated to this project has previous experience in developing and installing this type of project, nothing new for us. The team also has experience working in Alaska. The Siemens organization has offices here in Anchorage and Fairbanks. This experience brings important lessons learned from all over the world. When we engaged this past summer, there was a resetting of the economic analysis of what had been done in the past. The team worked closely together with local partners to review the broad spectrum of technologies available, systems available, solutions available, and came to a consensus of the best approach forward. Kelly outlined that with the multiple train system up in Houston, using the train as a delivery mechanism. So in August, the local partners, along with Siemens team, scheduled and attended meetings with a wide range of stakeholders, including representatives from FNG, IGU, and others, to help Siemens understand different perspectives, opportunities, and goals that they're trying to achieve. Through these discussions, we developed basic criteria that our solution should address, including utility-grade reliability, avoiding hidden costs, maximizing use of existing assets, maximizing safety for all operations. The following speakers will address these in more detail. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mike. Mr. John.
Thank you all for your patience. My name is John Sons. I'm with Siemens Government Technologies. I want to focus on utility-grade reliability and what that concept and try to make that relatable. Size is often confused with redundancy or reliability, but that's not really the case. When systems get larger, the urgency for a reliable system actually increases. So the larger you get, the more reliability you need. So I want to try to use an analogy to make this more relatable. I think it's safe to say most of us would be comfortable flying in a single-engine Cessna. And we'd probably even be more comfortable if we knew that pilot and we knew his experience and the close call that he was able to avoid. That builds our comfort in flying in that Cessna. Now let's say we have a 737. The problem with the 737 is it's only got one engine. And we're going to use our same pilot that we're really trusted in, but there's no co-pilot. Bigger system, higher risk, now our comfort level's gone. That's what we really mean when we talk utility-grade reliability. I see the legacy Fairbanks Natural Gas as a Cessna and the Interior Energy Project as a 737. You have to look differently at the risk and the reliability that's expected of those systems. In addition, that reliability has to be built into all the stages of that larger utility, the production, the delivery, the storage, and the distribution system. We think the board should carefully evaluate the risks and assess if there are more reliable solutions to the current plant approach. Specifically, one example is the investment in storage, a large storage facility. The size of the storage investment could be reduced in a way that actually increases your overall system reliability. Money that would be saved could be redirected towards making the production process more reliable. And there's a number of these opportunities throughout the process. Taking a disciplined approach to building a reliable gas utility will also have positive impacts to load growth. Any potential DOD customers will require a reliable energy resource. Energy must be available at all times for the installation, the DOD installation, to meet their mission requirements. If the utility does not meet their reliability criteria, they may not agree to convert. Conversely, if the gas utility can augment a base's energy security, possibly locating LNG storage on the installation, the cost of that storage might be able to be shared with DOD. Building in reliability or energy security will avoid issues that could negatively impact conversions that will be necessary to keep the cost of natural gas low in the Fairbanks area. Thank you very much.
Any questions for John?
I just wanted to get out of here.
Thank you.
Roger Purcell.
Good afternoon. I appreciate the time. Roger, I'm the former mayor of the city of Houston, and I was the mayor that was in charge of getting the railroad into Houston, developing 3,000 acres of heavy industrial. Our comprehensive plan when we did this included an LNG plant, which we did originally have that plan when we put it through there 5 years ago, to data about having the LNG plant on the rail in Houston. When we put this system together in that, phase one of the funding that came in was designated to the Houston area, including off track of 2 miles, the bridges and that, so that this type of facility could be placed in. Over a year ago, I met with different entities and sent to ADA plans of this, so it's been over a year that ADA has been known about this second location and the reliability of rail. But as we go on to these areas, I can answer questions on the Houston side. I want to talk about our understanding the current plan includes a number of hidden costs that are not accounted for. What would be the impact more than just on Fairbanks and Fort McKinney's communities? Among these costs are the upgrade of roads, realignment of recent road modifications, and wear and tear on the roads even after they are upgraded. Some of us who've been in the valley, and that, if you drove out the Titan plant, know you're on a gravel residential road. You go into a muskeg area that is not designed and not big enough to carry heavy trucks. Under 4,000 heavy trucks going across there, it's going to degrade the road. DOT does not have $350 million, which the city had turned around and looked at for upgrading to fix these roads. Your trucks are going to be tearing up these roads, and it's not in your plan for protecting the local public. We've had 5 deaths in the corridor just in the last year. Granted, it hasn't really been the trucks that have gone through there, but there have been the deaths on the road. You go into a residential safety corridor. You then go onto a secondary vine road, which is considered a residential outlet. I'd also said on the Planning and Zoning Committee for the borough, when we talked about these different areas and the transportation board. Then you go back onto a second safety corridor before you even get to the highway going through there. The state doesn't have the money to fix the roads, nor does it have the money for the $110 million to extend the railroad. So when you talk about points of going out, you already have the railroad completed at the Houston site, and you have the trucking ability right there to start with. So you don't have the problem of funding. Where's the money going to come from with this state? We all know the state is running out of money. We don't have those hundreds of million dollars that we used to have to complete. In the current rural solution, the heavy truck area will be directed towards an increase of demand. So as demand goes up, we're going to get more trucks. We still haven't had a plan from ADA, from the Titan plan, anything else on the DOT costs, nor the problems with the roads coming through there. In addition, the heaviest traffic will occur when road conditions are most stretches in the wintertime. The route also traverses one of the fastest regions growing in the area in the state. We already know that we are way over capacity. The capacity of the road is less than 10,000 or 20,000 cars a day now. 10,000 vehicles more than the road can handle. DOT's statistical approach indicates additional traffic could result in more accident fatalities. So the DOT came up with the Bremer Road over to Big Lake coming up. Well, in Big Lake, the community found out about this, and which I brought up to the Titan plant and also to AIG over a year ago. They went in and got a grant and put in a little bitty residential style roundabout in the middle of Big Lake. And their reasoning was, at the community council meeting, if the DOT and the Southern AIG would have been around, would have known, they do not want the trucks coming to their town. So they built a roundabout to prevent these trucks on the Bremer route into Big Lake to the highways, which was the shortest route. So they're not going to be allowed to go through there because the trucks can't go around the roundabout whatsoever. Again, you got to go back and get grant money to expand those areas. The cost can be as large or larger with the investment of the LNG production facility. Again, with the location that we said with the city of Houston, we designed this with bell saves so that you had both the rail and the trucking ability, but you also had it for expansion, power plant, sewage treatment plant, all in the same area. So the heavy industrial, which the valley has really needed for a long time, is put all in a centralized location with this area, which makes sense. And it makes a lot more sense to review this at this point and allow Interior Gas to make decisions that is best for not just the state and their local Fairbanks area, but the whole broad scope of the area itself and the city of Houston and the rest. So I thank you for your time.
Question for Roger.
Thank you, Roger.
Looking for Vern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Vern Rubright. I'm with East West Pacific. I'm also the former mayor of the city of Wasilla. In continuing with this vein here that's been already presented, safety is an important factor to assess any project of this magnitude. Safety of the process as well as safety of the community. One safety issue that impacts operational costs is the ISO rating of the area where the LNG production facility is currently located. The ISO rating for the Point McKenzie location is at 5A. Houston's ISO rating is at 8A. In a commercial plant, this would directly impact the insurance costs for the plant. The truck congestion, as Roger Purcell is already laid out, issue was noted before as a hidden cost that also presents a significant safety risk. what I think everybody in this room understands is in the Lock Hill area, the fastest growing city in the state. But in the 6 years I was mayor and now in the current administration, what we have is a spike coming down the Kinnick-Goose Bay Road off Parks Highway at the main intersection in Wasilla, where there's over 20,000 residents down there now. Not that many years ago, there wasn't anywhere near that number. Currently, the trucks come up from the Titan plant across the Flint McKenzie Road, which is approximately 5 to 8 miles, and it's over Muskeg, and it warbles. Years ago, it was a dirt road where we could go out to the landing that didn't exist, the ferry with the bears. Well, now it's kind of all improved, but there's really the only busy thing out there is the prison. And that road appears clearly to be sinking into that tundra out there. Then you come up to Kinnick-Goose Bay Road itself coming north to make it to the intersection of Vine just short of the city of Wasilla to go over to the parks. And they're very, very much residential and secondary roads. So you do have a safety risk. You have a lot more traffic. In fact, down by Settlers Bay, it's almost like its own little town there now because they have gas stations, post offices, the restaurants, housing. It's just growing and expanding. The truck, in addition, the backup plans with LNG, should there be an interruption in production, is that in order to obtain LNG, it's a 1,400-mile route trip to Canada to obtain it to the closest point of supply. In addition to the additional truck mileage.
Are you referring to a overland route or a sea route?
Overland route, sir.
All right. How about sea?
We don't know. I'll let when his question's at the end, I think Kelly and her team from Siemens is going to look at that.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. In addition to the additional truck miles adding a safety risk, the delayed delivery of LNG could pose a significant risk to the largest served community. The alternative site in Houston is zoned for industrial use, and the technology proposed will not have any flaring of gas, and all gas will be consumed by the system. You also know when Montana Creek washed out a number of years ago, there was a great interruption in what gas supply had to go up to Fairbanks and needed to go up, had to go by the old route long before Parks Highway was in there, which adds quite a bit of distance. It's about 305 miles from Wasilla out to Fairbanks. It's like 540 miles going around the old barn as it used to be. And especially if you're dealing in wintertime, my understanding was they were really down to a matter of hours before they ran out of gas at one time. But the redundancy of rail and the backup of trucks in the Houston area where the proposed plant is less than a mile from the Park Highway. It's a quicker on-ramp for them if they have to go by truck. And we know that the rail system has already been licensed to carry LNG and can carry incredibly more bulk of the LNG for the expansion in the interior. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. And then we're looking for David.
Hey, good afternoon. Thank you for this opportunity. My name is David Newfer. I'm a longtime educator in the Valley and currently working for East West Pacific Consulting. And we do truly, our team does truly thank you for this opportunity to share with you today through the public comment process. I told my team that there's no doubt in my mind that I will be your favorite presenter from this crew because I'm the last and I get to be a nice guy. And I want you to know that we realize the task that this board has before them and what a daunting job to be in charge of economic growth and development for the state of Alaska. So we thank you for that. We want you to know that we support the sale of Pentec/Titan to IGU. We also want you to know that we see our plan, as Mr. Harris stated, as being a completing interest in that project and not a competing interest. We do believe that the plan that you briefly have been presented with now meets and supports ADA's goals and objectives for the state. We would like to ask that Interior Gas be given your support and your encouragement to expand and grow LNG use for all Alaskans. And I am the one that does have the white paper that Kelly talked about. And so, Mr. Chairman, however you deem best to get that out, whether it's with you, with the Secretary.
Yeah.
Joseph. thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you.
Okay, so on this discussion, is there anybody on this particular presentation talking to us? One of the group I just called up on a visit. All right, so with the board's indulgence and hear a suggestion, is there someone from the organization who would like to take the question? All right.
Certainly,
let me start.
And if there's, we have subject matter experts,
depending on specific questions. All right. And Kelly, for the record, state your name.
Kelly
Morales,
Siemens Government Technology.
Thank you. So, that being said, board members, questions? Gary?
Well, I'm interested in your statement about $16 per million cubic feet. A couple, $16 per CF2, what's going in the distribution? What's the point in the system?
Delivery to Fairbanks.
Delivery to where?
Storage?
To storage.
Input flange or exit flange?
Input.
In your
or left, right?
Pardon me?
And it could be left over our budgetary number.
Based on what volume?
Based on starting with the current capacity now.
What number did you use for the cost of MCF for rail transport?
I'll have to refer to my financial model.
I think that was $1 per MCF.
$1 per MCF to put it in a rail car, take it to Fairbanks, and offload it into the storage tank?
If we could get back to you, I'd have to open up the model and get into the numbers, but we could provide that.
And we'd really like to, if there's, at another time perhaps, we could lay out the whole process, show you the financial model and all those inputs as we look through this problem. So we did like to consider a bunch of different options, technologies, transportation modes that went into building this sort of solution, but we know that we were not on the agenda and had limited time.
Well, I would say that's a suggestion that actually should go through John with our executive staff and the Titan Syntex FNG folks to have a call. Ask those pertinent questions when you get the presentation.
To the group, I want to thank you for taking the time to join us today. It's a pleasure to talk and visit. And we've been immersed as a board. I've been immersed personally in this for, I testified in front of my Cocker on 105, which was a tremendous learning experience. So I know we're initiating a conversation, but in your financial model, what did you use for sources of funding for the project? I mean, how did you capitalize it?
We assumed that there was the ADA funds that were there, the SEPS fund, bonds, the monies that were already laid out in the IEP
program. In their entirety?
We would not use all of them. Instead, we would use SEPS funds and the bonds in its entirety, but it did not go into other additional money. So it wouldn't require anything additional than what's already been identified.
And when you say identified, do you understand what you took into account, where some of the dollars were being headed other than in lookup action and transportation, i.e. the actual physical parts in Fairbanks?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure. Saying, did we identify that there would be a need for storage
storage and expansion that was needed in the Fairbanks area that was coming out of the SEP funds and the money?
So did we take into account money that might already be spoken for?
Yes.
Is that what you're asking? We did.
I know, Mr. Chairman, I know this is just a concept paper, if you will, so it's a high-level early screen, however you might phrase it, it's a concept paper, but is it, I want to be clear from board member Wilkins' question, so the $16 model price is an inlet, it's not a burner tip price, it's an inlet into gas storage price. I guess where I'm, so what are you assuming for a gas contract?
Feedstock price? Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
So we did speak to other gas suppliers outside of Hillcorp and were given quoted prices at $6.50 and another at $5.
I'm sorry, say that again, please.
$6.50.
$6.50 and $5.
But that supply's not under contract. Those are just discussion
numbers. We can't sign contracts.
Right. They're discussion numbers.
Yes, that's right.
There's a lot of room between discussion numbers and contract prices.
Mm-hmm. Certainly.
Experience.
So we used the best indicative numbers as we could to include, pipeline. There would be required pipeline to connect to the nearest point. And so, we're working with NSTAR to get, better budget.
What's
numbers.
The status of that pipeline? Is that designed?
Is it
right away?
It is not designed. There is right-of-way if it follows the rail bed. And there was other discussions that I know that they would have to look at for right-of-way if it went through Vine.
If I can answer those questions, they've been moving on those right-of-ways. I've involved in 9 lawsuits for helping build the railroad through there. Yes, there is a right-of-way up there. Now, there is some they have to negotiate with some landowners for the pricing that goes through. There is a shorter route through Vine. It's only 9 miles away. Otherwise, it's 14 miles away. So I've worked with NSTAR on projects of this, and it takes approximately 9 months to get them to the plant. So it falls inside that 1-year process of having it up and running. Like I said, the city worked quite a long time on this project for all the different angles for it. So anywhere between $10 million and $20 million would be the highest amount finishing up this type of a deal. But NSTAR, from the time they were going to go ahead, would be done within 9 months.
And we can see the whole process to build that capacity once there was approval. 12 months we could have liquor. So that can immediately ramp up that capacity.
So I think it's safe to say that in the 20,000 foot level, this is an option you guys are proposing to work with PETA or Pentex or IGU is in effect, purchases the gas utility as a different model option versus expanding the existing plant.
Correct.
Which is, obviously, there's some other things that the IEP project has to go through to get to this. And I will also say that, obviously, we, as a board, I think we all agree that we're looking to meet the IEP goals as cost MCF to the burner test to the consumer up there.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, a question I have, what I'm hearing is, do you support the sale of our assets to IGU, and then they would work with IGU on changing the gas supply and putting it on the Alaska Railroad? So is there anything that precludes us from business that we have on our agenda?
If IGU executes the purchase of the utility, we have a purchase and sale agreement that has to adhere to in a financing agreement, all of which I think can be worked out. But if, obviously, the goal, the interior goal and this board's goal and the state's goal is to vet all viable alternatives and get the best price, so reliable price. So the answer is yes, would facilitate it if it was a viable option for expansion.
So just a follow-up question, is there anything in the document that would preclude Siemens and the private sector that's here today from having their own agreements with IGU?
Not that scary. No.
Laid out a development plan that he's contemplating here. That would either be changed or made to fit.
So it's an alternative to the plant, the expansion that we've seen from the Titan plant.
Remember, the expansion isn't cast in stone. We don't know whether it's supercharged the existing one, put a whole new plant in, and the next to be determined. And so this is one of those additional to be determined options for the IEP project.
Okay.
Yeah, Brian?
I again want to focus on path forward, but I am surprised that I think Michael said that this has been worked on for the past year, so what matters is going forward, so you dig in and figure out what's the merit of the various ideas, etc. But it does seem to me to be coming in at an odd point in time, or I guess today's better than tomorrow, but I'm surprised we haven't had a deeper visit earlier. But I do want to address something. I heard the safety language, and I want to focus, Kelly, on a key phrase you used was, you postulated a substantial risk to life and safety, and that language is close to hyperbole. It's arguable. You can get into the merits of it and debate it, but the phrase you used that I caught was, once storage is depleted, and of course the central concept of the project at hand is that the size of the storage is sufficient to prevent that risk. And so I thought that language was loose.
And I think what John mentioned was size doesn't equate to
reliability. I heard John, and he had a good analogy.
So, and we think of that as being a single point of failure, that something happened to your tank or the storage plate of it. But think of an adverse event that, having your storage separate and diversified is safer than a single large storage.
Potentially. Those are conceptual things to be settled in the process.
Any other questions? Gary?
Well, I appreciate the green car in the room, but there's a lot of emphasis on a project here and very little emphasis on the consumer. So if I was to see this again, I would like to see the stack of numbers that adds to 16. I would like to see what that means at the burner, the meter, because that's what we've been focused on for 3 years, not the flange. I have great skepticism about a dollar on the railroad. Not going to happen. I have skepticism about the gas contract. I'm sure you're aware that we spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not a year and a half, to try to find gas. Found it at seven something. If somebody's out there wants to sell it for five, that's great. We haven't been able to get those people at the table. So just on those two numbers there, I can see $5 maybe laying on the table, which drives your $16 up to $21. And today we're somewhere around $19 and suffering headwinds with that number. So I'd like to dial this back and remember that this is a consumer-driven item, and without consumers, there's no demand, and without a number that we can sell that gas, nobody has a project. So this is very nice, probably somewhat late in the game, but this is nice, but anybody can put this together. I'd like to see the numbers.
We'd be happy to show you the numbers. I think we based our numbers with our discussions with Fury, and the two-gas contract that they just recently did to both under $7. But in speaking with burner tip and consumer, I agree that volume will drive that cost down, and key to driving that volume up to gain those economies of scale is bringing on the DoD customer. The DoD, we have great connections with them. The office, matter of fact, is right across the street from our office in Alexandria, Virginia, where we do communicate with them, and they would like to convert to natural gas. But before they would have to see really great, reliable system in place, and what's currently proposed does not meet that.
So I just want to make sure that we talk about not burner tips, but meter.
Understood.
Well, there's a big difference, so just...
No, understood. So when we talk 16, I'm just saying, or go less, but our model shows that we can get much lower if the volume does, because we've gained...
Well, of course, I agree with that. And you said DOD, do you mean Department of Defense?
I do, sorry, yes.
Is part of this plan is Department of Defense contracts?
Our growth does assume that we can convert them at some future point, should there be a utility supply.
Yeah.
And we have had those discussions with DOD directly.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
And one other comment for the board. I've seen this industrial site. I've been out there. I've walked it. I've seen the railroad. I've seen the rail bed. And the group from Kinnikon who was asking me questions that I just didn't know. And so I diverted all those to John.
And then I would recommend that the subcommittee jump in a vehicle and go out and look. And look and see if maybe you have, Mr. Chairman, maybe you've seen that.
Okay, it's on the ground in the air.
Okay.
Okay, further questions? Thank you.
I don't have a comment, Mr. Chairman. I am a past CEO of MCMT, Utility in McGrath, McGrath Light and Power. And I do know the challenges of the interior and what they represent and what your challenge is solving. Some of you may remember the Omega High, 1989, where the high for 21 days was 65 below. That's what we're anxious not to put a community in harm's way. And a lot of things happen at 65 below. The U.S. Weather Service recalculated that that high was counted with a low that hit 100 below for that period. We encourage consideration of this. We apologize that we've not been able to give you a full-blown opportunity. We look for that opportunity. We know the conversations have been occurring for the last year. And we look to expand on those as you permit, on terms and conditions acceptable to you, because you, we know that you have to meet the terms and conditions acceptable to the end user. Thank you again for your time on behalf of the Kennecott News. Greatly appreciate this time you set aside for us.
Thank you, John. Okay, so public comment is still open. So is there anybody in the room? I see Jomo Kirby. Jomo, welcome.
My name is Mr. Chairman. I do need to speak on a different subject.
Okay, what? Yeah, it's your floor.
A couple of questions.
We need your name and rank and serial number for
it. Jomo Stewart. I'm the general manager of the interior gas utility. It's not customary these meetings to have public comments proximate to action, so I'm just making sure that this isn't a public comment.
Okay. Very good.
I wonder, sir, just the import of the moment, if I might have a little latitude on time.
What are you asking for, gentlemen?
I have nothing specific. I just want to make sure I would be fully available for you all. Frankly, sir, I just wonder if I have to rush it to 3 minutes or if I have a little more time to be playing.
5 minutes and a half?
We'll give it a shot.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. So I'm actually here specifically to discuss I'm going to lay it right out. We actually would like to request that the ADA board, if it is going to take up this resolution, that it amend it to allow Dr. Spreestein the latitude to actually complete negotiations on these agreements before you will act on them. I will tell you directly, last week I had a board meeting. I had the opportunity, and I did consider it, of doing precisely what you're doing right now, just to pack these agreements to follow your wish list, to get my board's rubber stamp it, to get my signature on it, and send it over to you as a take it or leave it, best in mind. I thought about it, and I thought about it. I recognize that to do so would not only be against the way my father raised me, which is, to be honest, just forthright and good, and to hold my honor high. That would besmirch it. But I also recognize it would reflect badly upon the entity that I represent, and impugn its integrity, its reputation for a fair deal. Finally, probably most importantly, I recognize that it would shine an ugly and unnecessarily ugly light on process when the light should just justifiably be reserved as a spotlight on a good project, mutually beneficial to all parties, mutually agreed to, and that we could all privately stand behind in that spotlight. And so again, I would ask, there are a number of provisions within this document. I'll just give you a couple of examples. Right now, as this, these agreements are drafted, lay under the financing agreement, under the section regarding covenants, which, by the way, have attachment to default provisions, acceleration of loan, and up to 12-fold increase in the interest rate should you choose to do so. Right now, today, ADA is operating these utilities, or this utility, outside of this rate covenant. You took ownership of PedTex. You reduced the rates charged to the consumer for political and PR purposes, not charging for interest or principal. You are right now, today, in violation of the covenant you're asking me to sign. The day I do sign, should you act on these documents today, after you have signed them, before the ink was dry, I would be in violation of the operating covenant. I have here our report regarding the due diligence. Just to give you a couple of the highlights. Missed a comprehensive legal register on environmental health and safety regulations and compliance calendars for EHS. Your safety record for this utility has taken a nasty hit since 2015.
So what are you reading from? I'm sorry. I just want to know where due diligence report. Okay, dated?
This was just September 5th. This is simply when we reported to our board. We gave them a high level.
Report to your board about...
Okay. Although we're holding the asset due diligence report confidential, obviously because of the information included, you're the owner of the entity. So no one has requested it. I will gladly provide you all of the due diligence reports that have been generated regarding this project. But regarding the safety record, total recordable incident rates, TRRI, is high at 13.7 as of 2015. That's more than double the Alaska utility average, and it's almost over five times the industry standard across America for natural gas utilities. Equipment is lacking use or inspection notices. Electrical shutoffs are blocked by conduits. Tanks and piping are not labeled. Missing handrails. Spill control measures are not provided. Secondary containment is not always evident. The gentleman who runs the Titan facility, that facility was legacy when it was constructed using some surplus materials that were old at the time. There are no schematics for the system that is being operated, which means if that gentleman is hit by a bus tomorrow, we will be in a bind regarding how we might fix that piece of equipment if it were to go down. If I sign this before the ink is dry on the paper, I will be in violation of the operating covenant. I will be subject to acceleration of the loan and a 12-fold increase in the interest rate. I would ask that you please, if you're going to move forward on this resolution today, that you authorize the general or senior executive director to finalize negotiations on this passport. I am here now. You're all here. Your negotiating team is here. And though I will be woefully outgunned in this discussion, I have as close to it as allowable for a person like me, a plaintiff to co-chair powers, to negotiate and finalize these agreements. If that is not acceptable, can I look simply at that you again grant Director Springsteen the latitude to finalize in this space negotiations for these documents, so that we can move forward on a partnership basis that I have steadfastly tried to show. I could have done what you all are contemplating a week ago. I did think about it, but I thought better. I hope you might agree.
Thank you, general questions.
I understand, Joel. That last sentence you said, I couldn't contemplate what you're about to do. What is that?
I said I did contemplate.
You did, okay. What is it?
I thought the it.
What's the it?
It. When I discussed this with my board last week, I told them that we had really only three. I didn't realize that there were actually three or four major outstanding issues to be resolved. In regard to the transaction trial, in regard to gas supply covenant, and two others. One of the others now, I didn't realize it was as important to you all as it was the reference to the FNSB and their oversight authority of us. Mm-hmm. But I also told them that I thought they'd make good headway. The last negotiation process was identified in advance as being unideal to reaching final agreement. It was acknowledged by both attorneys within the room. At the time that they were operating under that, but you all had insisted on it, much as you had insisted in the May-June time frame. There were two technical team meetings, for which I followed completely through on that process. In fact, was very successful, at least on my end, under that process. But then when this is returned, they're to, I didn't receive these documents until, in this final form, until 2 p.m. yesterday. I only received this resolution as I walked in the room. So I didn't have really time to consider any of it. I will tell you that under, at least in the financing agreement, just an indication of just how rapidly this has progressed to this point. There are two new covenants built into it. I had to actually go within the document. I don't know if you all received the red line, so you can't even see what was under active discussion. But the two new covenants, one of them is 11.1.9. I'll go ahead and read it out loud. This is a new covenant. Again, it will be binding, probably the result of default provisions. FNSB rescinds or withdraws the authority of the IGU board to independently set the rates. They don't even have to monkey with the rates, which will be in violation of the other covenant. The simple act of for the protection of our ratepayers, if they decide to, putting up under RCA regulation, rate regulation, the very act of doing that would have put us in violation of this disagreement is going into it. The very act, not even a further action that negatively impacted other companies, the simple act of deferring to the RCA, as most of the other utilities in the state are under their supervision, would put us in violation of this contract, allowed us to note and increase the interest rate from 0.25% to 3%. I don't know. I personally believe that that is unreasonable.
So, forgetting the details for a moment, are you saying that just what you talked about the last 2 or 3 minutes isn't known to our side of the table? It just came out of nowhere? I mean, tell me how we got to here where you just saw that today.
How did we get here?
I was under the impression that we've been working down through all this. And they sent me, and we asked our executive director to speed up the process after we did the qualifying plan. And John did that. So this list we've been working down with items that need to be discussed, and I assume whatever there are four of those, let's say for the moment. And you said now there's a fifth that just got added, and you just saw it? Is that what I heard?
That is correct.
What is that?
Okay. Again, in the email that I received as a board yesterday at 2:03, it was simply it was a transmission of these documents, not in red line, but in what was termed as the final form, and with a little note that said that, oh, by the way, we've added a couple of default provisions.
It hadn't been discussed
at all.
Okay. Is one of them referring to the North Star Borough taking over the utilities?
It is.
Wasn't that a response to IGU putting in to the agreement that they were the ultimate power and that they could actually take over? As a matter of fact, they have the ability to shut down IGU. So as a prudent investor or lender, and we're dealing with you, Jamal, we went out over dealing with, so it could be a default provision. I think it's just a protection of the assets, my personal opinion. I'm not going to debate with you.
I would characterize this as a reaction to the IGU's request to balance ADA's protections regarding a built-in document regarding our recognition that you are an entity of the state, that you are subject to DCCED, you are subject to the administration, you are subject to the legislature. Those are your oversight entities, and the human insisted that those that recognition of that be built into the document. And so I consider this a negative reaction to our reasonable request that entities so recognize that we have oversight entities.
Mr. Chairman, I want to object.
No, I do want to say that. I do want to actually.
I want to get this back on the desk.
I didn't want to say this, and I did say this to Mr. Cherio on Monday. I believe from time to time that we may get more and I think that sometimes that we as entities are viewing ourselves in in an inappropriate manner. That some of the things that you all asked for are taken on our side as somehow nefarious when they really were not intended to be so. And that sometimes on your end you believe that we're looking for things that we're actually not. I believe it was taken, that particular provision was taken as if we were trying to look for some kind of get out of jail free card. Or get out of jail free cards. When in fact, again, we were simply looking for the protection of recognition on citizens, acknowledging that we do have oversight and duties that we also have to operate under, and sometimes have to follow their direction. That we would strenuously argue against any action that we might take. It jeopardizes this community, jeopardizes the health of this project, it jeopardizes the community's retention of this project. That somehow we were in fact looking for some kind of easy out. This has been a very long process, and no one knows better than I how hard and sometimes contentious and sometimes frustrating it is. But it has been successful. The MOU process was difficult. But we achieved an MOU, the terms of the agreement this year, that was mutually accommodating, mutually beneficial to all parties, and the groundwork for future agreements that would make an operating utility-grade utility for the community of Fairfax. We succeeded. And I believe that if given proper time, direction, motivation, we will do it again.
No questions?
Gary, just want to get this on the record. Tell them, at the very beginning of your statement, you made a sentence that had the words, take it or leave it. And I, when I heard that, my ears perked up because I didn't hear the rest of the sentence. I want to make sure that we understand on the record what you meant by that.
The finance agreement between authority and IGU in the form presented to the board is hereby approved.
I'm sorry, what are you reading from?
I'm reading your resolution.
Okay.
Section 1. Membership purchase and sale agreement between the authority and IGU in the form presented to the board today is hereby approved. In the name of and on behalf of the authority, the executive director is authorized to sign. That doesn't appear to leave any room for further negotiation. It sounds like accepting the final offer delivered at the time.
Okay, so that's your
you will have
reading
left,
of that.
You will have left your executive director no latitude to revise. Up to and including the fact that there's still typos and stuff. There's a whole section.
I just wanted to make sure that I understood what you said. Okay, thank you.
Further questions? Thanks, Mr. Hall. Further comments from the public? All right, we'll go ahead and close the public comments section.
Oh, yeah, the ones on the
file. I've already done the online.
Okay.
All right, next up is prior minutes. Move for approval.
Second.
Discussion. No, Gary. And
in second.
No idea. Oh, Gary. Thank you. All right, next up is the new business, IEP update.
Time 7A update on the interior energy project. This time I'll ask Gene Cario and members of the team to come to table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick update as I have previously kicked down to the different components of the Possible 105 plan. Natural gas, with regard to the natural gas supply, of course, we did enter into a new gas supply contract. At IGU's request, we actually went for a shorter duration of that contract to accommodate them as the new owner of the combined utility, the latitude to look for a lower cost of supply of gas in the future. A couple of things, though, that I would like to kick off again that we're achieved in this contract is, again, that the terms run for a shorter duration of time as we were requesting. It replaces the existing old contract, allows us to replace that on January 1st. There was to be a 4% increase in price as of January 1st. For the remaining 3 months of that old contract, we are going to be able to avoid that 4% increase in price by January 1st. It offers a great deal of flexibility on volume. And as you know, as we move forward to potentially join the two utilities and to charge or be able to serve customers off the additional pipe that has been installed in the state, we're not quite sure how quickly customers will sign up, what the blend of light industrial and residential will be. And so we needed the flexibility as a supplier to be able to grow that demand as quickly as we can, but not have a lot of take-or-pay obligations towards a new potential new supply. And so this contract does give us a great deal of flexibility to grow that demand without having to commit to take-or-pay obligations. It contains no price escalations in the complete term, 3-year term of the contract, and it also avoids what has been a differential peak pricing for winter peak demand that existed or exists in the current contract that will be avoided again over the 3-year term. So we believe that we had customers that we had to get gas under contract. Our existing contract ran out at the end of March. We have done so, but have done so in a way that facilitates, you know, a new combined utility under new ownership and preserves as much flexibility for that new owner to look for a contract that potentially has more benefits in the future. So that's on gas supply contract. With regards to the expansion of storage, the board previously gave Dan Britton authorization to let RFP do engineering work on the expansion of storage for South Fairbanks. There is some time criticalness to that, of course. If we are going to qualify for the potential for a storage tax credit or repayment, the facility has to be put into operation by January 1st, 2020. And we are looking at probably an 18-month to 2-year construction period of time that's required for the expansion. And so we want to take the first step forward. It's critical that we get the foundation for the storage in during this winter season. And so at this point, I believe an RFP is out as due to close at the end of this month. The indication to the conversion are that there's a lot of interest, and he's hoping that there will be some favorable terms that come into that RFP process. On the expansion of the plant capacity, the proposal that was authorized or the plan that was authorized as part of the House Bill 105 plan was that there would be an expansion of the LNG production capacity at the existing Titan site. However, there will be an RFP that will go out for that expansion, and so at that time, if there are different technology vendors that think they have a better, more efficient plant to use the LNG at that site, or I would imagine that it was possible for somebody to turn in a proposal at that time to have a different site, because there might be some additional attributes with regards to redundancy and maybe price, or we're not sure. Those, it seems to me, would be more appropriate to come in as part of a proposal for the expansion of capacity. We did the 105 plan based on the thought that it would be an expansion of the existing Titan site to keep control of costs so that you wouldn't have two sets of operators. You wouldn't have two control rooms. You would have two truck loading plants, but if there was somebody out there that thinks that they've got a better plan, I would think that at the time that the RFP goes out, that's the appropriate time. And that's what I have expressed to the individuals on the 10th century today under a public comment. So let's see, we've got gas supply, we've got the stores, we've got the plant expansion. At this point, there hasn't been any additional expansion of the distribution system, other than I know that FNG is always looking to work with DOT and the city of Fairbanks to make sure if there's a sensible way of putting pipe in the street, or the blacktop has been removed. And there's an ongoing construction project. We do look for opportunities to do small road crossings and things of that nature because it can be done at such a low cost. But absent the additional pipe, a sizable expansion that was put in the street in 2015, so there's been no additional expansion to speak of since that time. And I know that we have had some hookup of some interruptible customers. But a very small number. If you're interested in more detailed information on that, I'll make sure that Mr. Britton can give you the information on that. Questions? And Mr. Chairman, also, just Carson, let me know that the latest quarterly report was distributed to members of the legislature. The primary thing that was disclosed in that quarterly report was achieving a cluster 105 plan at your last board meeting. The 105 plan memo was attached and added as an attachment to the report, and then it had a link where it go to the IDT website to look at all the backup documents that went along with that 105 plan memo.
So Gene, a couple of things I just want to make sure I understand what the IEP and the IGU potential sale Pentex. So the goal is that the combined utility of Fake Reliance is considered what we call it an investment grade utility. And correct me if I'm wrong, the reason why we want to do that is so that when they go out for bonding for future expansion, with state backing, so the citizens of all Alaska back the revenue loss, that there's no question about the revenue stream going to pay those bonds. So much so that the finance agreement says that the sets dollars loans, when I say sets, that's the dollars that have 0% interest for 15 years, 50-year loan, and the following 35 years is at 1/4%, they become in second place behind the revenue loss. Is that a fair statement?
That's correct.
Okay. And then along those lines, with that being said, has there ever been any, any pushback on those terms?
Well, I think there's general agreement that maintaining a utility-grade investment-grade utility is advisable so that you would be attractive to the bond market. Of course, there's the pre-authorization for up to $100 million of loans with that state, loan obligation.
Yeah.
That doesn't preclude the IGU from issuing local revenue bonds. They could do that. They may need to do that long-term in addition to utilizing the state's value, the state's bonding authority. And that the overall enterprise would be more attractive and hopefully qualified for a lower interest rate because it is a sounder business operation, a lower risk in that kind of thing that you have that lower interest rate.
What is the history of utilities, borough, or city-owned utilities in Fairbanks?
Well, we unfortunately, and Mr. Wilkin would know for sure, but they lived in the 80s. Municipal utilities did fall into a bit of disrepair and ultimately ended up with the municipality selling into private ownership and capital investment was made into those utilities. Whereas today, as a customer, I don't have any concern with by the water utility and the sewer utility that there's no personal residence. I think that's one of the reasons why Mr. Wilkin in particular has been very insistent that we have covenants in the document that assure that the utilities operate in such a way
that it will be, in fact, viewed as an investment grade utility, not only for your assurance as the lender, that the money has been put to good use, that there's a solid business operation to assure to the best ability that the debt funds will be repaid. But as you mentioned, it's an incentive for them to be able to qualify for bonding, and if they do so, then your set repayments actually become secondary to the repayment of that bond. So having a good, sound operation is a key component and moving forward. As the MOU was signed, there were commitments in there that AMA that we will be very sensitive to help IGU or the combined utilities if in fact demand presented itself slower than we had anticipated because the price of fuel oil has come down, that we would be extra flexible. But from the other side, there was a commitment by the IGU that they would contractually be obligated to run a certain operation. So we tried to see the covenants that are built into some of the documents that you have before you today, assure that everybody understands that that's the expectation, and in fact, the utility will be operating in such ways to honor that commitment.
So at some point, a previous utility, the infrastructure was segregated, I guess, that was used and was sold to private investors. The private investors then came in and spent the capital in order to put it back up to normal operating. So that being said, my question to you as an IET lead is, when this sale is consummated to IGU, if the utilities are combined, does the utility have the proper balance sheet in order to operate so that does not happen?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think a combination of things. Definitely, again, going back to the current fuel price, the expectations of rapid growth are questionable. And so we have done our modeling not counting on the robust growth that we were modeling on just 4 years ago when the price of fuel oil was so high. We believe that the existing utility does have good cash management and good cash flow.
The existing utility, which one?
Existing FNG, the operating utility. Although IGU had some assets in the ground, it's not truly operating as a utility to their customers at this stage. But we believe that that when sensible expansion and seeing how that customer demand is tracking along as capital is deployed, that this utility can meet the covenants that are built into the documents, that it can maintain an investment grade utility status. It will then be attractive to the bond market, but not if there's a push to expand too quickly. It will require that you be able to see the customers coming along and the capital is deployed. That has been a big issue between the original concept of how quickly this we would be able to build out in the community. IGU in their service territory had a six-phase proposed build out that was supposed to be done basically in 6 years, just boom, 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 one area after the other. And they had to wrestle with the fact that under today's competing fuel price, that it's not likely to happen that quickly. I think their board of directors has wrestled with that, but as we have developed the document that we've reviewed today, there was a realization that they would still strive to serve that overall service territory as quickly as possible, but it would likely have to be staged more carefully. That's one of the things we were looking for, again, so that the combined utility is not overextended, capital costs too high, those also support future customers, and you would potentially get into what utilities call the debt spiral, where customers are dropping off, costs are spread over fewer customers, and attached to notice up for the further Q2 and degradation of the utility. So I think there's a general understanding that we were not confronted with the price of energy in interior Alaska that we were 4 or 5 years ago. It's still beneficial for the utility, the interior, to have access to natural gas. We wanted to expand as quickly as possible, but we're going to have to be careful, thoughtful. And I think the document that you have before you today set up a mechanism to make sure that the combination of utilities, the operation of the utilities, the expansion of the utilities going forward is done in a thoughtful and business-like manner.
Thank you. Further questions, Gene? Gary?
Just for the board's knowledge, Gene, would you brief us on the pop shop check and that issue with the election and then this window where we need to have a person on IGU, just so the board knows what's happening?
Sure. I mean, Fairbanks with the local election, and a strange combination of things happened. One of the existing IGU members ran for the borough assembly and was successful. He was sworn into office, I think, last week or sometime recently. In order to take his seat on the borough assembly, he had to resign from his seat on the IGU board to avoid any conflict of interest between those two. So that means the IGU, one of the directors on the IGU board, is vacant. The woman that ran for his seat was successful, and she was elected, but her term does not start until January 1st. But at this point, we've got a number of documents that we've been negotiating with and modeling over the last 3 years or 2 years. That's pretty detailed. And so the new person comes in on January 1st, but we've got this gap. There's a very likelihood that both this board and the IGU board need to make a number of decisions between now and January 1st. And so when Mr. Majewski, one board member resigned from IGU, Bob Shefcek, submitted his name to the borough mayor for consideration to be appointed to that spot, to fill that spot until the new board member comes on in January 1st. So it's my understanding that that's the direction that the council intends to go, and that will come up for the borough assembly's ratification, I believe, this evening.
And there was a letter that entered this morning by someone that I know of but never been in a meeting questioning why that appointment was made. It just stresses me greatly because Bob Shefcek has forgotten more than any of us know about this project. I think it's a great time for Bob to come and help us work our way through this. And I, of course, offer my support to that and applaud the mayor for his appointment, temporary as it is. And I question anybody that wants to question that decision on the part of the mayor. So we'll put that on the record. Thank you.
Gary?
Mr. Chairman, I just want to put on the record that Gary's only speaking for his own memory, not
in defense of Mr. Rosenberg, I certainly, I worked a long time for decades with Bob Shefcek, and he does bring a pretty amazing skill set. He can run spreadsheets in his mind, you know, and he certainly has been involved in this project right from the get-go. So with regards to modeling production off the North Slope and how that was challenged, why that was challenged, and why there was an effort then to switch to a coherent supply. Bob certainly has been involved in all of those different iterations of the project. And so he does bring that to that board for the next 2 months, if that's the direction that he's going to go this evening.
Thank you,
James. All right. I guess I do have to thank everyone for that.
Next up is item B, executive session for the Interior Energy Project in Rockland.
Mr. Chair, I move the board enter executive session to discuss confidential financial information related to the Interior Energy Project in Mustang Operations Center, Washington.
Okay, Eric. Dan. Dan and Gary and Eric are agreed. All right, so are we going to the back of the room? All right, executive session.
All the board is in executive session. The phone will be on you. Thank you. Thank you. You're back on the record.
Thank you.
Yeah, we were doing so
well. I saw you driving.
Oh, Greg, we're back on the record. So, welcome back, everybody. I will advise the board is not taking formal action on that. It's just while in executive session. That brings me up to item number 7C on our agenda, which is Resolution G17-16, approving the sale of Pendex Alaska Natural Gas, LLC, to Interior Gas Utility, approving a finance agreement with the Interior Gas Utility, authorizing the transfer of the North Slope Path and North Slope Material Sale contract to Interior Gas Utility, and authorizing the extension of the maturity date on the Interior Gas Utility existing line of credit. This resolution has two attachments, purchase and sale agreement, and financing. I will have a motion from Russell to move.
I'll second.
Thank you. And Jerry second. Discussion. Con?
Yes, Chair, there was a request to amend the resolution to allow me to make technical corrections to the
correct.
Yes. Yes. Section 2 of the resolution. And then that would be matters of section 2. So it would read, the finance agreement between the authority and IG and the representatives of the board is hereby approved. In the name of the, on behalf of the authority, the executive director is authorized to sign and deliver the finance agreement along with appropriate appendices and exhibits to the agreement and necessary technical corrections.
Is there any other amendments to this? Anything dealing with the distribution of funds?
Covering appropriate appendices and exhibits.
Okay. Yeah, we can make the exhibit appropriate on that point.
Okay. All right, thank you. Discussion. John, would you like to go over some couple of the highlights on the on the agreement?
Mr. Chairman, do you want to use that amendment on the agreement?
Sure. Friendly amendment, second. For Jerry. No objection.
Chair, would you like me to do any walkthrough of the resolution?
Well, certainly, Dan.
I'll try to keep it brief and hit high points on the resolution. So the legislature authorized ADA to provide financing for the Interior Project in 2015. To further the IT, ADA through its revolving fund, which serves all Alaskans and requires a return purchase Pentex. ADA expects to own Pentex for only a short time and transfer it to a local control entity. In January 2017, ADA and IGU entered into a memorandum of understanding for the IGU to acquire Pentex. A further goal of the efforts to facilitate integration of the two interior utility systems. And in September 2017, ADA approved a HB 105 compliant plan, of which selling Pentex to IGU and providing financing to IGU was one way ADA can complete, can implement the plan. And this negotiation process has been moving forward for the past 10 months. And so we're at this point with the agreements before you, and wanted to invite Gene Terrio to the table as well. With a few items that are we're part of recent discussions to come to conclusion on these agreements.
All right.
One item. ADA needs to maintain financial oversight for loan disbursement related to construction. And I'd ask Gene Terry to give a little bit more background on the underlying issues that we need to resolve to keep that fiduciary responsibility for the authority.
So John, before you start, can you give me a rough magnitude of how many dollars we're talking about for the oversight?
And Brenda Applegate, we worked through a ballpark estimate.
Well, not on the oversight, but I can...
No, how many dollars have we spent on construction efforts? We're talking about utility expansion, we're talking about storage, and we're talking about the processing. How many dollars is that?
And then...
What are those dollars?
Yes, and then we can determine the storage expansion is... $42 million. The target for the tightening is $40 million. And on the page 56 of
just add them up, maybe $100 million. $100 million. Okay, so we're talking about financial oversight of $100 million in construction.
Right.
All right. Thank you, Gene. Go ahead.
I'm Mr. Chairman, this has been an item that has been open between the two entities, and whether it's reasonable for ADA to anticipate that those oversight costs be covered. I think from the authority's perspective, that part of the due diligence, as the lender, and I will point out there is an expectation that when the combined utility goes to the bond market for funds, there's an expectation that the bond market is probably going to require management oversight, as bond funds are used for capital outlay, and ADA basically indication is that as a lender, it requires the same type of oversight. Just to make sure that the funds are being appropriately spent, that the projects are done according to appropriate specs as the money is being spent.
So in other words, when the owner requests a draw, that there is someone that ADA has and that expertise in that field to affirm that the money was used appropriately and the draw is appropriate. Is that kind of what you're saying? Against the loan proceeds?
That's correct. And we really anticipate that the storage, the Titan expansion, or whatever LNG capability expansion, production expansion is done, that it will be within the next 2 or 3 years is the expectation. Then those funds will be done with ADA's need to cover costs overseeing those funds will be done. Expenditures by the combined utility beyond that will be through bond proceeds, and the bond lenders are likely to have similar requirements, but it will be their requirement on our
Gary?
So, is this something that's outside the norms of normal horizontal or vertical construction? I don't know, Gene, if you're one to answer that, or certainly Dana's involved in this type of... Are we asking something that is out of the ordinary?
No, my understanding it's not, but you're right, there are others here that are involved in construction projects using government dollars to compete to that.
Yeah, an example would be the state, there's the 90-10 split on the federal highway construction dollars, 90% feds. The feds have oversight on the DOT, and they actually set the DOT request draws and federal people do audits and checks to make sure that the dollars are being spent appropriately. It is traditional and customary in the construction business that the lending institution has someone that is schooled in that, I guess, industry, whatever the construction is, so that the draws are appropriate. And the fiduciary responsibility, I guess, is a check. It has nothing to do with impeding the construction. It has nothing to do with means or methods. That's the owner, the owner's management, the owner's architect, and the owner's engineers.
So if I'm KeyBank and I'm financing a $50 million building in Fairbanks, KeyBank, you have that represented?
They do.
You as a... Without question.
Without question.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to add, I know for a fact that Manitowoc Electric, when they just constructed their $250 million equipment generation project, they actually engaged external independent auditors to audit the transactions and the advances to the contractors throughout the three-year project.
I just wanted to provide that. Thank you, Dan. Okay. Any further questions on that item? Next one, John.
And then another item relates to gas supply. So at the request of the Interior Gas Utility, ADA negotiated in good faith and did actually secure a medium-term natural gas contract. So accordingly, we believe that, that in accordance with IGU's request, the natural gas supply issues are satisfied.
Any question,
as I explained my overview, but and Frankie just mentioned, one of the tensions as we look for gas supply is that the board was interested in a longer term supply. So as you, as a potential new owner, was interested in not being bound by our decision or your decision, and that they have flexibility as soon as possible to look for a gas supply that has additional attributes. And so the decision when you approve the modified plan was that you would go with a three-year contract. And as I checked off this morning, there were a number of favorable things compared to the existing supply contract. Is it as low as ADA or IGU hopes they can achieve in the future? Certainly not. So we believe we pare it back so that they can see that there is something up there sooner rather than later. This term only lasts for 3 years.
So if the purchase goes through and they close, it'll actually be less than 3 years.
By the projected time of closing, you're right, we will into the contract.
And how long did IGU go out to their credit, go out and try to find a better rate, and then touch their aid and jump in at the end? How long was that time? It wasn't like a year?
No, it wasn't quite that long. It was about 5 months, I believe.
Between the two entities?
Well, it was that October of 2016 that we agreed that we would let IGU really lead the negotiation looking for a contract that you had the better terms. And then
11 months. 105
was done
last month, September.
And we stepped back in
from the start, including IGU team. You gave them authority back in October of last year, as soon as they started, and we didn't have a supply contract until August, September this year.
Sure.
So it's about 11 months. So that being said, board members, I'd assume that within 6 months to 12 months after this closes, they will be back out looking for a longer term agreement with someone. Because the 3 years, comes by pretty fast.
Sure, they may, and if it's a potential producer that needs to make investments in order to produce that for a date certain in the future, they would want to start those discussions sooner than later.
Good point, Gene. Okay.
So I'm clear. So the resolution that we're considering, when it's signed, that signifies that IGU has accepted the gas contract at that point, say, when at 12/31?
The documents are written so that yes, they acknowledge that gas has been secured previous to the gas being secured. There was a condition precedent in there that you know, the whole thing was contingent on gas being secured. She would secure that, and so now we move that section.
So what are they asking for now? That recognition not happen until closing, which could be as late as May, RCA approval? So they could back out on RCA approval?
I think they're there's been a request that language be contained in the document that they, if they determine that the gas supply that we've now entered into was not acceptable, that that would be the reason to not move forward.
Since we've discussed that contract that was negotiated with Hillcorp, has there been significant or any concern about that gas contract? To my impression that those 8 or 9 points that we rolled out that made it a good and acceptable project for both IGU and ADA were acceptable. But now that's not the case, or they're reserving the right to say not a good contract at closing, which again could be May. Have I got that right?
I think that they're reserving the right. I mean, certainly, did we all want a lower price? Absolutely. And you, the Ada board, and FMG management had a dilemma that we had to be able to assure to the RCA that we had gas for our existing customers. And as we got to the point that, you know, we were getting close to 6 months away and that contract was run out, we had to move forward and secure something. Had we done it in a way to preserve as much flexibility for a new owner to look for an alternative sooner rather than later.
I guess, Mr. Chairman, this doesn't make, it's not logical that we would do all of this work. And at May 31st, this IGU says, oh, well, we're not so sure about the gas contract. And that's the possibility. Is that not what they're asking for?
I think with the request of the language being left in, it would leave that possibility.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions on this topic? John?
And then another item related to due diligence costs. There was a request to be able to use funds currently loaned to IGU to cover due diligence costs, but our memorandum of understanding clearly states that each party will bear its own due diligence costs.
Mr. Chairman, as we've dealt with IGU and the expense issue that came up towards the end of the summer, we proposed dealing with the expense issue in three categories. The first one was for expenses that IGU had looking for a gas supply. You and the board took action to cover those costs out of the available capital fund. The next category was expenditures dealing with both the physical and business integration of the two utilities. There was an agreement to roll those in as an allowable loan, allowable expense under the existing IGU loan once a 105 plan was done. You, of course, did approve a 105 plan, and the existing IGU step loan has been modified to cover the integration costs. The remaining category costs were the due diligence costs, and as we proposed that three-phase, and it was our proposal, the three-phase way of dealing with costs, it was proposed that the due diligence costs would be an allowable expense or use of loan funds in the new debt loan. So upon closing, they would be able to, IGU would have the choice of using cash that came with the purchase of FMG, they could use capital funds, or they could use step funds to cover the due diligence expenses that they had incurred. And that's what is contained in this document.
So
they would be able to do that upon closing.
So the bottom line is that if we allowed them to use these loan proceeds before closing and they didn't close, we would be stuck the loan. I mean, it's like paying for someone to do a pre-buy on a car and then not buying a car.
That's true. And I think from your perspective, would that have been, if in fact you bore those expenses and then there was no close, would those expenses have advanced the project in any way?
Yes.
All right. And then the last item is really an overarching issue where ADA needs to ensure the ongoing operation of an investment-grade utility and the covenants and the agreement are necessary to meet this responsibility. And I don't know if Gene, you wanted to go into any kind of further detail on some of the underlying issues of why the covenants and events of default are so important.
And it's true. It's been consistent, and Mr. Wilkins from Fairbanks, of course, has been on strongest on making sure that we have covenants in the agreement that assure, again, that the utility is operated in a real business-like fashion to preserve its ability to close to the bond market, but also to assure data as a lender that the enterprise is being operated to make sure that the steps money falls and that we be paid back. In the MOU, we committed to be flexible, build flexibility into the document so that if demand it presents itself as too costly, we would extend an extra flexibility. But on the other side, as you committed to through contractual arrangements, they would commit to run a tight ship.
And in other words, an investment-grade utility.
Investment-grade utility, which is assured by the rates being set, not overexpending on the capital side. There's just a number of things that are built into the covenants. And so IGU is committing to those, and I guess from Ada's perspective as an agent of the local government, is committing to those. Now for Senator Wilkins and Mr. Perry, myself, having been a part of the legislative body, we understand that the legislative body has appropriation powers. And through our separation of powers, that's a right that can't be infringed upon. And so in the document, we acknowledge that the Fairbanks Marshall Borough, through these documents, we cannot compel the Fairbanks Marshall Borough to expend from the public purse, nor is the Fairbanks Marshall Borough online or responsible for the IGU debt. I understand that. That speaks to whether we can force or think we can force their appropriation power, and clearly we can. The second thing the legislative body can do, though, is just exercise its legislative rights. That's beyond, in addition to the power of appropriation. And so what we try to write into the document here that if this through some exercise of its legislative power, the Fairbanks Marshall Borough causes the utility to be in default, then default consequences will be triggered. And hopefully, as the local government, if they were contemplating exercising their rights, which we cannot limit, they would contemplate, well, what will the results be? We certainly didn't want to suggest in any way that the commitments that have been made to run a solid operation could be swept aside if the utility was directed somehow from above to ignore the covenants on rate setting or to ignore covenants on debt to equity ratio, things of that nature. So we're not limiting the legislative powers, but we are trying to make it clear that according to the agreement, if the exercise of those powers causes the utility to be in default, then default remedies, default negotiations, a period for cure, the things that are written into the document as far as what negatives will befall the utility and what path they have to cure those will be triggered.
Jared,
can
you say anything more to that?
I just wanted to clarify one thing that there was a comment made about if you sign the document today, then there'll be immediate default. And I think that's a misunderstanding of the covenant. Because the covenants that speak to debt service and to rates are tied to the debt service ratio. That only kicks in when you have debt that has to be serviced. In other words, you have a principal and interest payment due. The SEPS loan that's being proposed and written in this agreement has no payment, no interest for the first 15 years. So there could not possibly be a breach of that tied to the SEPS loan in any way.
Okay.
That's the only thing I was aware of.
Gary?
So
Gene, thank you for that explanation. Jerry's just hanging. So I've always been concerned about the cascade of control, and IGU is going to run this utility, and let's just look out 5 years and see things are going south, things are not doing well. Under what circumstances could the assembly move in and operate the utility? And if they did, what are the consequences?
Sure, I think that worked
go ahead, Mark.
So, Mark Davis for the record. Malign is proposed not to trigger any fault unless there's a fault of the customer. And that's what Jerry said. It's a very important point. So that if, for example, they decide to go to RC regulation, or they decide to let the borough have more oversight, none of that would in and of itself cause a fault. It would only be if it was the fault of a written covenant. And if they wanted to make a change, that might trigger a covenant, obviously that's something they could come to Ada with and say, we might want to modify the covenant and have a discussion, like we're having a discussion about changing the due date on the line of credit.
So
there is a provision in the agreement that says if the borough assembly purports to take over rate setting, or if the city wants hold, or if the Fairbanks withdraw their consent to operating this utility, that is its fault.
Right. But that would be taking all their power. It would be making a shell out of it.
So the people of borough are happy with IGU, and they lean on their assembly to take over the IGU. Take over IGU, and it now becomes under the purview of 10 elected people, which concerns me greatly in regard to rate setting. So, if that happens, what happens?
That would be an event of default under the financing agreement, which Mr. Terry points out relate to the cure period, the mediation period, all the default provisions would apply. Failing any resolution, then ADA would have its breach of contract remedies that it could pursue, there's a number of options. They have seeking the appointment of a receiver to take over the utility, foreclosing on collateral, calling the note due.
So there isn't a direct way that if things are not doing well with IGU, it just comes to ADA and we make appropriate decisions to protect our investment. It's got to go through the assembly. They have to trigger it, and then it has to go through the legal proceeding.
Mark Davis, that is my understanding of those covenants. It's designed so that we're not interfering with the IGU or with the termination of Tarboro, that we're acting as a lender, and we're taking remedies only as a lender would take.
ADA's remedies are as similar to what a lender would have to protect the collateral, to protect the repayment stream from the
company. There's an only question, too, about inspection or instruction. So the line of credit that was executed with the insured gas facility in 2014 provided for the ability of ADA to inspect what was being put on the ground, and I instructed staff and third-party contractors to do those instructions. We spent a little bit of money. There were no violations. The construction was just fine. But we did, as the sheriff said, take that normal lender remedy to talk them up.
So is it safe to say this agreement was with IGU, and it's not, the borough is not approving it, but yet the borough has the ability to come in and put their will on IGU, right? Is it also safe to say that the borough would want to have do whatever it wants and still have the loan document? I mean, that's like keeping a cake, having a cake eating it too. They have the oversight, they have the legislative authority, but we're doing a deal with IGU. And so if the borough isn't signing off on it, if it goes to the borough, for good or for bad, we don't have a deal with the borough.
and so that triggers the default. Now, the default may be, we're going to, the borough may say, we're going to do everything that this agreement says. It's just a different name, which in my mind says great. Sign up for it, prove it, you know, the terms and conditions. But it does cause the default to happen if they do that, if they take over or they use their legislative powers on IGU, or one of the authorizing entities, the City of Fairbanks or the City of North Pole, takes away their powers given to the boroughs to form the utility, correct? That triggers a default, which then you go to their entities. Regardless of what rates they pay, yeah. They can set higher rates or lower rates.
I think you're correct. The agreement is with IGU, and it's written based on the existing ordinance that sets up IGU and gives them management of the utility. And so that's a playing field we're operating under. So the agreement is written that way. If you change the playing field, that has consequences. But I think you're correct that if the borough, if any agreement can be changed by mutual agreement.
Yes.
So if the borough did get to the point where they needed to step in for whatever reason they have, there is always a mutual negotiation that can occur.
50 years is a long time.
Well, and I think Mr. Day is right. So if there's a revocation of the powers of the IGU, that is in itself a default. But hypothetically, if the borough was directing the IGU, but there was no breach of covenant, right, then that would be a different question. So again, the way we always...
It's still a default.
If it's still to rape. More withdrawal of the authority to run the utility.
But it's not to every action they might take.
No, I mean, you can't predict. They could add a few more members to the board. They could make it a 9-member board. Or
so we're acting like a passive lender again. You're not directing everything out. That's what I want to make clear.
It stresses me greatly. It concerns me that we have a board of 7 that are elected. I've said this before for 2 years. That are elected and 3 appointed. That's bothersome. What's really bothersome is that 5 or 10 years from now, this rolls to the point where you have rates being set by 10 elected officials. We've tried that in Fairbanks, and it's been a colossal failure. I want to put on the record that I understand that that's not going to happen with this utility without a fight. So, having said that, thank you.
Further questions for this? The other items, John?
Just in summary, I believe that the resolution as amended and agreements meet multiple important objectives for ADA. As it works with the Interior Master Center in furthering the Interior Energy Project, including meeting the fiduciary responsibilities of ADA, promoting ongoing operation of an investment-grade utility, and maintaining the ability to bond, which will be critical for responsible expansion.
Okay. I would like to make the comment in a general statement that when ADA bought Pentex FND, the goal was to create a single utility so that it would help the end user, the ratepayer, reduce their costs for space. ADA, with resolutions from the North Star Borough, City of Fairbanks, City of North Pole, agreeing to that concept, we are now at the point of passing a resolution with a purchase and sale agreement and a finance agreement. I will also say that for every month that this lags, because we use our revolving fund dollars there, the rate of return of 5.06, the price of the utility goes up $200,000 a month. I want to get that on the record. That the reason why we had a House Bill 105 plan last month, and now to the credit of our staff, the hard work of the consultants, that we were looking to approve a resolution, is to mitigate that $200,000 a month, top additional purchase cost every month for the residents of the interior. And I want to make sure that's on the record, that people understand we're pushing hard, we want this to come to fruition, the goal line is in sight, and I hope that sooner than May that this closes, and I understand it's got to go through an RCA approval process. I would hope that we can get an expedited hearing or do whatever we have to do, because again, 6 months is $1 million. No, I think it's on the record. Fred?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to speak to some of the same issues you identified and clarify some of the discussion that's gone on today, beginning with our wide-ranging public testimony that occurred this morning. And I want to step back. I've now been involved in this project since late 14, early 2015, and I want to remind all of us that the SEPS funds, the source of those funds is the time when Alaska had a capital budget that was beyond imagining today. And the application of those funds, I want to go where you were going. Tick-tock, we're on the clock. One of my favorite Abraham Lincoln quotes is to the effect that when you look at something, you need to look whether it has more good in it or not. You need to reach a reasonable deal. And we have been hard at work in good faith with a process that has brought forward an agreement that reflects most of the concerns of each party. And at some point, it's time to bring it to closure and get to the finish line, and that time is now. These funds are generous. If you were to bring them before the legislature today, you would not be able to establish a program that worked in the way this works. This is a 50-year loan at 0.25% interest, interest-free for 15 years, principal deferred, and interest-free for 15 years.
Plus capital of $40 million.
Yes, I was going to review. We have provided IGU loans of $8.1 million in April 14, $29.7 million in February 15, and FNG of $15 million in April 14. We have had our shoulder to the wheel of moving the Interior Energy Project to fruition. This is the opportunity of a generation to secure reasonably cost, clean power fuel into the interior, and we ought not to get dissuaded from getting that to the finish line. In moving this resolution forward today, myself as a board member, I want to make sure the message is sent and received that, hey, we've been haggling through every nuance. How big is this agreement? One is 59 pages and the other is a whole bunch, 38. So we've got 100 pages in front of us that capitalizes on a whole range of back and forth between the staffs, between the consultants, and now that it's reached the board level, I want to say to IGU's board that we've done this work together so that we could together bring this into reality, and tick-tock around the clock, the time to do so is now.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to associate myself with board member Paradise comments.
Mr. Chair, as Deputy Commissioner Paraday mentioned, we've been working on this for a fairly long time, ever since I've been on this board this time. It's consumed a ton of energy from this board, a ton of energy from our management, and we have tens of millions of dollars, as you alluded to, tied up from our revolving loan funds, which is not being used for some other development project and not producing other jobs. And we need to get that money back into the economy, producing jobs someplace else. We need to get this board moving forward with its mission. This was a side mission that was given to the board by the legislature because the legislature believed that this board would be more responsible with it than just granting it to a community. I think this board has been. I think our staff has acted professionally. And I think it's time to get to that point. And I can tell you that I've been on the board in 8 of the last 10 years. And this is the issue that we've spent the most time on than any of the time I've been here. And it's not productive to move forward with ongoing negotiations into the future. We spent $349,000 on negotiations outside of our regular staff costs over the last 10 months, and I think we need to put this to bed and move it to the board of IGU and let them complete the process.
I'd like to say a few comments. I'm going to support the resolution that I think is coming to the table. It's not on the table.
It's on the table.
I'd like to speak in favor of supporting the resolution. My opinion is it's a huge subsidy to the people and the businesses of the interior. They should be very appreciative, in my opinion, of that. And then other non-quantitative positive benefits related to this resolution and our sale of our assets, IGU, is clean up the air and also the future potential to help the Department of Defense protect the nation. So I just kind of want to throw that out there. I think time is of the essence, and I would like to encourage the IGU board to embrace our resolution, get it done, get on.
Further
comments?
I concur.
Anyway,
saving more than
yeah.
Should be in front of this
question. Well, before I answer the question, I'd like to thank the staff and everybody in the board for the patience and the deep dive of all the different issues. It's my hope, and I assume everybody else's hope, that this gets included in the near term. Then we can facilitate expansion of a combined utility in Fairbanks and all that means. So with that, I will ask the question.
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
Deputy Commissioner Paradis.
Aye.
Mr. Kennedy.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Yeah.
Ms. Brown.
Yes.
Mr. Dick.
Yes.
Mr. Pruitt.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Where are my little cheat sheets right here? Okay, that brings us to item number 8, director's comments, A through D. John?
Among dashboard reports, development project matrix sheets are available for your review. Continuing education calendar, board members are interested in attending, of course, please contact Sherry Severson. And our next data board meeting is scheduled for Thursday, December 7th at the office. Yeah.
Item number 9, board comments. Gary?
John, I just want you to know and the staff to know that I recognize that you added project location to this. It was very helpful, and I hope it's helpful to everybody else too. So pass that on, please.
Thank you.
I just want to thank you, John, and you and the staff for your continued work.
Sure.
Incredible patience and
thank you.
Yes, thank you.
I want to second her remarks, thanking you and the board, because the board has to put up with a lot, and including me. But I did want to bring something to the board. We had a board member in 2008, named Brian Andrews, who was lost in a plane accident. The plane wasn't found until today, but it was found today and was reported in the newspaper. And some of the people who worked here remember Brian well. He was a great man. He's a good guy.
His son was on board.
His son was on board with him. His office was right next to mine. And I think I kind of asked for a moment of silence for Brian. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry. Yeah. I want to talk very briefly about the audit subcommittee. Underneath Brenda's chair is a rough draft of the audit report that's nearly 100 pages long. And accordingly, an email was sent out, Mr. Chairman, that Mr. Paradis, Mr. Wilkin, and myself will receive an electronic copy of the draft of the audit report on approximately November 1st, and then we will then have a meeting of the audit subcommittee on November 8th at 10 a.m. And so I wanted to make sure that was okay with you.
Yep, that's fine with me.
Fred?
I'll just add my thanks to John and his team, but also our external consultants and to Dan as well. Thank you for all the work on bringing this to where we're at.
I'd like to sign on to everybody's comments, and I'd also like to bring up that the Ada family has an operating entity called FNG Fintech, and that leader is Dan Britton, and I'd like to just based on the board our condolences to Dan losing his father here recently. But we do appreciate your efforts, Dan, and all you do, and we look forward to the new adventure, hopefully, here in the near future. So with that, I will call this for a motion for adjournment. Mm-hmm. Over
here. Yeah. I'd like to have a private moment to see after the meeting's over. Okay. And if any other board members
are there. Yeah, okay, I'd like to. Actually, could I borrow three of the board members at a time for just a couple minutes? which three can I borrow first?
At least three?
I need three at a time.
I got Jerry.
For a couple minutes. So can I maybe Fred, Russell, and Elaine, can I borrow you for a couple minutes?
I don't like it.
I am.